Welcome to the Leading Real Change podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kerr, an expert in workplace culture change. From my unique background in behavior science, public health, and community advocacy, I help corporate leaders with evidence-based individual, team, and organizational change to create thriving workplace cultures for all. In the Leading Real Change podcast, I interview dedicated and passionate change makers about their careers, how they lead change, and what leaders can do today to make a difference, to build healthy, inclusive workplace cultures for all. I'm excited to share these examples of real workplace change with you. You'll learn about effective strategies that are working and how to overcome real barriers to change that challenge us every day. I hope you'll feel inspired and more confident to keep leading change in your workplace. Please share this podcast with other HR, DEI, or ERG leaders who you know are working hard but are struggling to have an impact and need more support to effectively create a thriving workplace culture for all today.
My name is Karen Price. I am part of the people team at Progress Software. I head up a team called our Organizational Effectiveness Team. And so our whole purpose is to help enable our individuals, our teams, and our organization to reach our potential. That's what my team really does. And so I have been at Progress for about 6 years now. I've been in the HR space for about 2 decades, just over. So I've had during that time an opportunity to do a lot of different parts of HR. I've focused on inclusion and diversity. I've focused on talent development, leadership development, culture and engagement. And what I find interesting is all of those different pieces contribute into some of what we're going to be talking about today in terms of what organizations can really do. From a personal standpoint, I am a mom of two. I have a 5-year-old little girl and a 10-year-old boy. So the elementary school years are exciting and rambunctious and a lot, but it's a lot of fun as well. And I love being their mom and just seeing them grow. I also have a large extended family. And so there's a lot of cousins and other little ones that are around. And I really like being able to contribute and connect with my community. So being able to, for example, be the room parent for my daughter, I really find that very energizing.
That's great. And thank you so much for that introduction. And I think that's what's so important, to recognize what does bring you energy, because I often recommend to women to not feel that obligation to do those volunteer positions if it's draining, if it really is from that sort of, oh, I should, people are going to judge me. But if it is something that the connection brings you energy, that is just so important.
It is. And I find that if you can find ways to meet multiple needs or values through that, it's very empowering. So for example, one of the pieces I'm really striving for is to find meaningful times to connect with my kids, right? Because none of us have enough time. And so being able to be there and be present with her and at the same time contributing to her class, it to me is like a win-win all around.
And I know even this morning we mentioned you've had a snow delay with the school. So many moms are still experiencing kids home with illnesses. It's a constant challenge to keep on schedule.
It really is. And I woke up this morning with a full day, of course, of meetings and an email box full. And I went, oh no, I can't believe it's a snow delay. And so you just have to adjust it, right? I don't know how all of us remain resilient and keep on, but that's what you have to do, is just adjust in the moment. And I'm really fortunate that my company is really supportive of that, that I'm able to, and they appreciate the need to be able to really flex to allow me to accommodate both. And it's not just me, they're very intentional about that for all of our employees. So I think it positions me to be able to do that with a little less guilt than otherwise would exist.
Exactly. And I think that is so important. We do have to manage our mindset as well, and our own expectations. And that can come through getting others to help give us permission, set realistic expectations. Sometimes that can be a coach. But again, the organization has to also provide it. So it is this real match between the two. Because again, even if your company provides that environment, if you lose energy on the guilt, it doesn't work either.
No. And it's really hard to be forgiving of ourselves, right? We need to forgive ourselves that we're not always going to get everything perfect. We are going to forget to put it in the kid's favorite snack at a certain time or something else. We have to be okay with that. But it is hard.
It is. And that expectation of perfection as a mom and the ideal worker 24/7, these are some of the challenges we face. And they're not in our imagination.
No, they're really not. And so one of the tools that I always recommend folks consider is to really reflect on their values and really reflect on what you just said about what gives you energy, what really builds up that enthusiasm for yourself, and then be diligent about finding ways to plug those into your schedule and into your life, your values, and building up your energy, because otherwise you're going to be depleted and it's just going to be too hard to be able to continue to move forward in a positive way.
Right, exactly. Yes. And reflecting on those values, I think, is really important at an individual level, also at a corporate and leadership level too. But at an individual level, I definitely struggled with that because I don't think I realized how many values had been passed down to me that actually weren't my own. Values like honesty that were important to me, yet I had such a difficult time giving honest feedback to people. So there were such challenges in actually looking at those values and saying, how have I operationalized those on a daily basis? And to have this value of hard work was one of my principles. That's what I remember a colleague said to my husband, oh my goodness, your wife is the hardest working person I know. And I was horrified. I was like, I don't want to be that person. But of course I was. And that's why I ended up in burnout too. But it's just like, how do you say, okay, now balance is important to me as well. So sometimes these values are in conflict. So I definitely found that whole trying to find new values or work out what my values were was a really challenging exercise.
It really is. And the other piece that I always recommend is, just as you said, organizations need to be diligent about thinking about their values and instilling them in a way that supports employees. And I always recommend employees take the time to look at their own values, look at the company values, and be able to find the synergies between those. And usually that will give you some additional connection and energy. Thinking about values at a company level and how it ties into this work, one of the things that we at Progress have done is we just did a kind of pause and reflect on our values. And what we found is the ones that we had already had underway were consistent. We were very diligent, though, about making sure that we embedded our appreciation for inclusion and diversity, appreciation for collaboration. People at Progress are at Progress because they love our products. They love the people that they work with and they want to have an impact. And so that thread of relationship and people, you'll see throughout it. And if you think about how, therefore, companies can transition that, values can feel very abstract. How do you take that and really then implement change for your employees? The way you do that is you take those values and then you embed them into your processes. So for example, our values are woven into our performance processes and our promotion process. So the way that somebody is able to contribute, for example, to our inclusion and diversity efforts through being on a committee or leading one of our employee resource groups, there is space in our process for them to talk with their managers about where else they would like to contribute at Progress, the different types of work. And then in our promotion processes, to really think about both the what and the how is what we talk about it as. So what each of us are contributing and then how we go about living out our values in a meaningful way. So going back to what you had said about really thinking about where you're spending your energy, when I was talking about my room parent experience, that is one way that we try to celebrate and shine the work that each person is really taking on to help us all be better together. But values are so critical in making sure that organizations are successful, as well as you were saying, from an individual standpoint.
And thank you so much for that example, because that's exactly like the level of detail that I want to get into in this season of the podcast, because it's really about how do you do it? And I could tell someone exactly what you said is how to do it, but coming from you has actually operationalized that. That's so important and valuable. So to step one step backwards to the things you mentioned there. So values alignment, when there's values misalignment, that's one of the conditions in the workplace that Christina Maslach identified as causing burnout. And then lack of purpose, it is also another one that can be affecting some people. And it really is that connection between what they're doing and a larger purpose. So I love that you mentioned purpose in there. And you said appreciation, but then you went in and actually explained, okay, that appreciation is linked to performance. Because recently with the McKinsey and Lean In, the great breakup report where senior women are leaving corporate America, they were showing on there that less than 20% of people are evaluated on contributing to DEI, on talent retention, on team morale, and on career development. That the main thing, 98%, are just on business goals. So I'm so glad you actually really said this has been embedded. This is how you operationalize these values. Because again, behaviorally, we act upon what we're rewarded to do. And so those systems have to be in place. So that's a fantastic example.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think if organizations only focus on results and not what we call the how or the values or the way that people behave, they are not going to be nearly as successful. As you said, purpose, if they can define the purpose and the connection and really connect the values in a meaningful way for their employees, it is very powerful in engaging employees. And what I have personally seen is it gives each of us an increased boost of energy because we know exactly what we're looking to accomplish. And we know that the folks we're working with are great folks and that we are aligned around how we're going to be working together to accomplish it. So that's just one example of it. But this conversation has been at Progress for a long time. The topic of inclusion and diversity and really creating an inclusive environment has been very thoughtfully reflected on. So even when you hear the way I describe it, most folks do describe it as DE&I. That makes sense. We intentionally put the I first. So we talk about inclusion and diversity, and that's because crafting an inclusive environment through all of the different ways that you and I have spoken about in the past and that people see, that is what really allows us to create a holistic, quote, system that people can thrive in. And when I talk about that inclusive environment, I'm really talking about all of the different angles, be it leadership. So leaders being front and center and acknowledging and appreciating different perspectives and the involvement employees have in creating the right culture in our different ERGs, et cetera, and making sure that we're thoughtful about how we are making sure that different perspectives are seen in leadership and different backgrounds are seen. So leadership is one lens into that, but then the other lens is around how you build communities. So to have a really inclusive environment, you need to build communities. It's not a company-wide kind of across the board, you can like paint broad strokes and just have it done. Every single individual's experience is going to be slightly different. And the closer you can get the communities to your employees, the better. And so communities could look like networking opportunities. It could look like employee resource groups. It could look like technical communities for your technical folks, mentorship opportunities. It runs the gamut. And then the other piece that I would call out around inclusive environment is thinking about the different processes and structures and systems you have in place to support your employees and looking at each one through the lens of inclusion and making sure that you're challenging your own assumptions, you're diligently removing any biases if they exist, and that you're tapping into your employees to help you do that thoughtfully. And so we've done a lot of work with that at Progress. We were fortunate that inclusion and diversity has been woven into the company for a very long time. And we have great support of this work from the top all the way through the organization. But it's a lot of work to pause and look at every system and process and say, what's happening? How do we make sure that we're getting a very diverse talent pool in whatever way you're looking at it? The reason I share that is that inclusive environment piece is the piece that if I was sitting, and I am always, if I'm sitting in the shoes of somebody listening to, for example, your podcast, and I'm trying to think about how I help manage my own career and avoid burnout, they're not alone. They play a role, right? Each of us play a role in our own world, but companies and organizations play a role too. And so inclusive environment is how the organizations can do that. And the underpinning of all of that is a focus on the human. It's a focus on our people and a very empathetic leadership approach, which I know is easy to say. I know it is hard to always execute. We're fortunate at Progress that we have that support and the ability to try different things to make that impact. So if anybody is leading an organization and hearing this, I know it's not easy, but it is worth the effort to try, because you will make a meaningful difference for your employees, and that will make a meaningful difference for your business.
Exactly. Thank you so much. You're touching on so many fantastic elements there, and I'll draw some of that back to the science that I come from too. So maybe starting with, it's not easy. Yes, that's one of the first things I always say about change. It's not easy. We come with a lot of discomfort and fear about change. We often fail. But if you start with understanding that, that's why I get so frustrated at the Nike Just Do It. And I remember one of my motivations for starting this podcast as well was listening to another podcast where this very informed leader of organizations was saying, we just need compassionate managers. And I was like, what does that mean? Those are just words. So that just word has always driven me insane. And then, like you described, the way to do it is experimentation. We definitely know that, again, from our behavior change science. Change is about finding out what works, when, where, with whom, because, like you said, one size doesn't fit all. You need your communities for your different groups, because there isn't a silver bullet. There's not a one size fits all. And so, yes, you have to be intentional. And like you mentioned, it's really about finding those blind spots. And you can't do that alone. And again, it's not just that you can't, but this shared decision-making, this collaborative learning, these are things that, again, I know that from my public health science, this is how we much more improve implementation of very important, say, medical recommendations. Because if you don't have that buy-in, then you won't have implementation and you won't find your blind spots either. And then again, we've seen that if you want breakout innovation in business, it has to be around shared decision making. And I always love it. Rishi Tolshayan described it as, you have to help plan the party. It's not that you've been invited to the party, you planned it. And that's so important. So I love that those are all things that you're doing. You did touch on briefly there your own career journey. Let's hear a little bit about that, because again, the other point you made is that you're not alone. And that's why we have these podcasts, and that's why we have the collaborative process, not only because social learning is actually the best way to learn, especially for challenging behaviors where there's change. We need the role models, we need the opportunity to learn socially. It's actually how we best learn, but because of the aloneness too. So tell us a little bit about that journey so that my listeners can hear about that. And then we'll dig right back into all these fantastic examples of organizational change that you've done.
So my career journey, thank you so much for asking. When I talk about my career journey, I also talk about my motherhood journey. So just let you know, I'm going to talk about both together, because as I always say, we are all whole humans and we need to be able to really bring our whole self to both. So in terms of my career journey, I have been in the people space, as I mentioned, for a long time. And I knew way back at the beginning that I wanted to be in that space, because what really energizes me is helping others and organizations be successful. And so I've been very fortunate that I've had the opportunity to be in the people space in a lot of different teams and being able to create teams that support that. when I reflect on my career, having folks who have been supportive of me learning and growing, even with all of the chaos of being a parent, I have found that is one of the most energizing pieces. So having folks that you partner and you work with that appreciate both your professional and your personal goals, priorities, et cetera, and who are willing to stand there with you and support you has been one of the most powerful pieces in my career in moving both ahead in terms of role and expanding the impact that I'm able to have. And so I will share a more recent example. I am excited. I was just recently promoted at Progress, and that's a really big deal. I've been working towards that for a while. And what's interesting is that we have ongoing career and development conversations at our company. And so my boss and I have had ongoing conversations about that. And she is the one who said, "Karen, you're ready. You can do this. Look at the contributions you're making. You can do this." And in all honesty, I pushed back for quite a while. And it's that whole imposter syndrome. And in the end, I said, "No, you're right. You're right. I can do this. I can, and I am." And so that sort of support is what I'm talking about through my career. And I've been fortunate to have that. I also work with an amazing group of people on my team. They are able to really make such a meaningful impact for all of our different constituents and employee groups that I personally, as a leader, just get so energized by that. I want to stay on calls with them and keep going because they're doing great stuff. From a personal standpoint, though, I will tell you, my career journey has been challenging. So I had my first child at 35, and it was a very hard pregnancy. It started off fine, no problems. And then one day I went into the office and I said to one of my coworkers, I said, "Oh, there's some issues going on. I think I'm going to go to the hospital and get it checked out." And I said, "I'm going to take my computer just in case. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Like, I'll be back in an hour." And she turned and she was like, "From that moment on, I was in the hospital for 5 weeks because my water had broken early and very early. So it was like 25 or 26 weeks in pregnancy," which for those who have had that opportunity, that's very early. And so I was there for 5 weeks with my child inside. And then I finally gave birth. And then he, of course, needed significant care. And so he was in the NICU for quite a long time and in the regular hospital nursery for quite a long time. And what I remember of my situation is in that moment, you have to focus fully on your child. You have to focus fully on caring for yourself as well. And yet at the same time, the day he got out of the NICU was the day I was supposed to go back to the office because I'd used all of my time. There was no more. And even having to grapple with that decision, do I care for my newborn who is just coming home, or do I go back to working when I needed to work financially and for benefits and everything else? That's a very hard struggle to have to emotionally manage, especially after such a complicated pregnancy and everything else that happens. Now, I was very fortunate that the company that I was with was able to accommodate and give me some flexibility for that. It was very challenging. And then my second pregnancy was somewhat similar. I joined Progress not knowing that I would get pregnant around the corner. It was like a month or two after that I found out I was pregnant. And I had to turn to my brand new boss and say, "Hi, I'm pregnant." And it was funny because I told him that I was pregnant on the same day that one of my other colleagues told him that she was pregnant. And it happened to be International Women's Day. And I didn't even know that it was, but that's what it was. And we were both members of the people leadership team. So our boss had to turn and go, "Oh my goodness, I'm losing two of my leaders right at the same time. And oh my goodness." And unfortunately, that pregnancy also was complicated, and I ended up in the hospital for quite a long time. And I'm, again, very fortunate that I work for companies that are thoughtful about their people. And I intentionally chose Progress because I knew that the values aligned with mine. And so I felt very supported through that very challenging time. So I know that's a little bit of a long answer, but I feel like I'm going to share my whole self with you, Jacqueline.
That's perfect. I really appreciate that. And again, I don't know if listeners realize, but the US has some of the highest rates of premature birth, and then also some of the world's poorest maternity leave. So these two things just do not match. So it's really challenging. You mentioned that you chose progress. So this is definitely something I recommend, and I've actually prepared an article for the Harvard Business Review with some other career coaches on this, which is how do we choose these? Because this person environment fit is so important. So how did you know what to look for? Like, how could you feel sure about that? What were some of the things that you did? Because I think this is really important for us to go forward thinking about, we do have choice and we can choose.
That is a wonderful question. And I coach folks on their careers quite frequently, and I pose a similar question to them. And so I have a whole bunch of different ideas I'll share with you. Before I do that, let me just share with your audience, who is Progress, just in case they're wondering, who on earth are we talking about? So Progress is a tech company that has been around for 40 years. And what we do is we help businesses be able to really innovate and move their businesses forward in a technology world through creating really awesome apps and technology. So they utilize our tools and our products to be able to support their technologists in doing that. And so just in case folks are wondering who we are, in terms of how you pick where you go, organizations have a very diligent process that they use to select talent, right? If you are looking to select a company, you need to have just as clear and organized a process for yourself. So just like the company outlines different topics and core expectations of the role and different questions that align with their values so that they can gauge how well somebody will operate in their environment as well as their technical skills, we each need to do the same. And so I always say, do a lot of research to understand the organization from a cultural standpoint, being able to explore what are their values, how well do those align with your own. I always recommend truly pausing and pull out a piece of paper or a journal, write down your own values at the start of your search and or whenever you decide that you're exploring, and keep that as your true essence for yourself, right? It's separate from your search itself. It's who are you? What are you looking for? What sort of an environment will really help you thrive? That is then going to let you pull it up and do a comparison against what you're seeing in the organization. So in terms of a tangible response to what you're saying, draft your own questions and be thoughtful about those when you bring them in. Challenge and pose questions tied to your values and the company values. If they say inclusion and diversity is one of their values, for example, ask them how that's demonstrated. Ask them how employees are involved. If one of your values is being able to balance your work life with your personal life, for example, pose a question around it and ask for maybe one or two examples of how successful employees have been able to do that effectively. That detail is going to help you really be able to understand that. Culture can feel very abstract. The word can feel abstract, but what underpins culture is behaviors. And so that's what you're looking to really get to, but you need to be diligent and know what you're looking for. So going back to why I chose Progress, I diligently looked at the values. I looked at the organization. I spent time with the folks. And the other piece that I did is I gave thought to what industry do I want to be in? I'd been in tech for quite a long time. Before that, I was in construction for 10 years and I loved that industry. So very different. And I knew that I wanted to stay in tech because I loved that energy and that pace. What size company will you fit best with? I knew that this size organization would allow me to have a really personal connection and make a very meaningful difference. And so those are some of the questions that I recommend folks consider.
Thank you so much for those. And I love what you keep mentioning is being intentional. And again, I think sometimes we can feel victims of the pressures around us, but actually we do have choices and we can be intentional. Now, obviously it takes courage to still ask those questions and say, yes, I want these values and they're important to me. And we don't always have choices. Definitely the choices can be very constrained. But yeah, I love that intentionality. And also, my goodness, you're speaking my language. Culture does sound abstract, and so does systems, but they are basically the behaviors. They are the sum total of the decisions people make every day. I always get frustrated when people relegate something to a systemic problem as though then it's not their problem. But actually, it is all the choices and the behaviors we demonstrate on a daily basis that make those systems.
You hit on something really powerful there, by the way. So when people hear the word systems, usually they're thinking of an HRIS or some other technical system. When it comes to really seeing and being able to move the needle on these sorts of large changes, you have to think about systems very broadly. It's your leadership, it's your values, it's your processes. Then yes, your systems themselves, it's the communities you create. It's all of those different pieces that everybody should look at as clearly and specifically as they look at their technical systems. Right? Because that is going to let you then identify where can you have the biggest impact. It probably is not your HRIS at the start. It is probably making sure you have strong, visible buy-in and making sure that you really are understanding your employee experience and you are tweaking what you're looking to accomplish based on their needs. You said this before, that whole concept of it's not a one size fits all. That is very true. So if, for example, there's one organization who, and this tends to be, for example, sales folks, right? Sales folks tend to get a lot of energy from being together and being able to talk X, Y, and Z. Other groups, that might feel more draining or be different. And so being able to adjust, going back to that burnout, understanding what will best serve your employees? Is it more wellness focused activities? Is it having leaders be very diligent in showing that it's okay to struggle when it comes to balancing work and family? Or is there something else? What really will make that change? And I'll tell you, for me, with all of the COVID craziness on top of everything else I described with my children, the fact that Progress Leadership was so gracious and appreciative of what each of us did and willing to let us show up with the kids climbing next to us or having to juggle all of that. And the fact that they didn't just deal with it, but they diligently said, and I remember our CEO turned to me at one point, we were in a meeting and I said something along the lines of, I'm really sorry that they're interrupting. I'll do my best. And he turned and he paused the meeting with a number of other folks. And he turned and he said, Karen, it's okay. You're juggling a lot. It's okay. And just having that acknowledgement, I felt so much more at ease. And then I was nicer to my kids. So I wasn't screaming, go be quiet. I was able to kind of be more present in the moment.
Perfect. You will be able to be a better mom and a better employee. And even just you saying that, I got goosebumps and feel a bit teary-eyed because it doesn't take much, but it's the right words in the right moment, stopping and being deliberate and intentional. It's so important. We've not got too much longer, but I would love to hear a few more examples of other things that you've done in the organization around burnout prevention. You clearly see the two very tied, inclusion and burnout tied, which I do as well, but not everybody does. And then also, yeah, just very much that, how have you operationalized that employee-centric, human-first philosophy?
You're right that to me, inclusion is tied into the possibility of burnout. And that really goes to the fact that each of us are different. Every single one of us have different circumstances, different things we're dealing with that could contribute to burnout or could avoid burnout. And so that is part of why I link those two so clearly. When I think about well-being, it is very challenging for us as individuals, as well as organizations, to support folks from avoiding burnout. But some of the ways that we've done it is we have a great team of folks called our people experience team. And one of the many things that they do is they organize well-being efforts in each of our different regions. So it's based on what are the needs of those employees. Again, pulling it as close as you can to the employees so that the experience really resonates. And that could include well-being sessions on financial management or on different breathing techniques or yoga or whatever it looks like, as well as just a whole host of different well-being opportunities that folks can tap into. So that is one, is being thoughtful about putting your efforts into well-being and making sure that it is not a secondary thought is number one. Number two is, I would say, it is an ongoing, continual focus that each manager, each employee, each leader needs to have in mind. For example, during COVID, one of the things that we asked all of our managers to do, because we knew that this was a possibility, our employees were just amazing and worked even harder during COVID, was we asked every manager to stay really close to their employees. We said, ask them. We shared some questions to help them gauge if folks were feeling supported, what else they might need, just so that we were able to proactively help them versus letting somebody struggle because they didn't want to ask. And then we also do an employee engagement survey twice a year. It's what I call our most successful people effort because we have just an unbelievable participation rate from our employees. It's just amazing. And we use that to help guide what we're doing and what else do employees need? What is getting in their way? How do we increase efficiency so that then we, I think you said this before, we're working smarter, not harder, to be able to accomplish what we need to accomplish. So those are a couple of them. And then I'll go back to when it comes to well-being, the relationship element. So ensuring that employees have relationships that they can rely on, be it with their team that they're working with or an ERG or whomever else. I personally find that having those relationships and sounding boards can help me recenter and focus myself if I'm struggling with something. And that way folks aren't having to deal with it all on their own separately. So we have very relational conversations, for example, with our colleagues. And we'll talk about some of these topics of, oh my goodness, I'm dealing with this or X, Y, or Z. And it just helps us not feel like we're alone in some of those struggles of balancing, for example, family and work. But the last piece that I'll share is for organizations to really make a difference around well-being and around just the overall health and engagement of their employees, you need to have a holistic company-wide, we're in it together, we are there to support each other kind of concept from all of the leaders through the organization. And that goes right back to your values and how people really live that out on a daily basis.
Great. And as you say, it's part of the prioritization that you've created. And like you say, you're being proactive about it. That's so important. And I think some of the examples too you gave there in terms of when we share our own struggles and we're also doing personal check-ins, those are such important tools for psychological safety. And that's like the basis that we need to even have these conversations. So those are great examples. I think another one that I've also come across I love is while you're doing a career plan, you do a well-being plan next to it. Because again, how are you going to move this career forward? Because I think that's what we so often look at merit and stretch assignments as doing more. So if it really is, there's more expected, is how are you going to manage your health if you are going to contribute more? But for me, it's also, again, what you talked about earlier, which is actually, let's say, what can I do more during the workday in the work that I'm doing that contributes more without it being more time and effort? How can I do it with more impact and efficiency? I wish we did that more.
I wish all of us did. I wish all of us took the pauses that we know we should to stand up and give yourself 5 minutes. That's not something I'm very good at. I really like what you're saying about the idea of baking wellness in. We have quarterly check-ins with employees and managers to talk about expectations, feedback, career development, et cetera. And we get to a piece of that, but not quite as concretely as that. So we might take that back and start implementing that in what we do. So thank you for that idea.
And I think the other thing, the little bit of science I'll interject here, is one of the reasons why bias and burnout are related. There's studies from the medical literature showing that when physicians are in more burnout, they present with more racial bias towards their patients. And when their burnout recedes, their racial bias recedes. So part of this is what you said, being deliberate and intentional, actually to overcome our biases takes quite a lot of mental energy. It's in our superhighway in our brain. And to get around that, we need extra energy and mental effort. Now, if you're in burnout, you don't have the extra energy and effort. So even unbeknownst to yourself, you could actually be demonstrating and having more bias without knowing it. So that's another way that I always connect the two, because I think it's so important. But let's end with any remaining recommendations.
Definitely. Again, let me just start with thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun getting to have this conversation with you. My recommendation for everybody who's listening, avoiding burnout is really hard. It's hard for each of us as individuals and organizations. It is something all of us are struggling with in terms of how we balance. What I would recommend to, or I'm going to give you two. I'm going to give you one for individuals and then one for businesses. For individuals, share with each other, talk to each other so that you're not in it alone and you can get other ideas that you might not otherwise see. Sometimes when you're in that moment, you just aren't able to see it. And having a friend or a confidant come up beside you and saying, hey, what about X, can really be a meaningful difference. Tap into your networks for that support so that you really feel it and you're getting different perspectives. For organizations, you have amazing employees. They are loyal. They are hardworking. They are doing a ton and they are very committed. And thinking specifically for working parents, oh my goodness, just the amount that they are taking on. So organizations, empower your employees with flexibility, appreciate their contributions, and really think about how you can make an environment where they can thrive and accomplish both personal and professional. If they're only accomplishing professional, it is a limited period of time before they have to then turn and focus. Somebody said a quote to me the other day, if you don't make time for your wellness, you're going to be forced to make time for your illness. And it's true. I wish I knew who had said it, but whoever it is, you're very smart. But that really struck me. And so for both sides, organizations and individuals.
Thanks so much for listening today. I hope the podcast brings you fresh ideas, renewed confidence, and energy to keep leading change. If you need a partner in these efforts, I can help you effectively build a thriving workplace culture for all. I'll help you overcome the real barriers to change you face every day and help you lead real change with evidence-based solutions. In particular, I want to work with passionate leaders who have tried and failed. Because I know you have what it takes, and your experience will help you clearly recognize the difference I can make. For a free consultation today, please visit my website at www.leading-real-change.com. That's www.leadingrealchange.com. Control your effect.